This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And today, Tantalk Radio Network studio has been invaded. And we are just packed in here. It's so much fun. I have the Newport Ritchie Writers Group, and they are here. They have come in mass, and it's going to be so much fun because, you know, when we talk about the joy of writing, they all exemplify it. And I want to say, a special thanks to Glenn Erickson, who is so wonderful to help support Joy on Paper because he believes in encouraging people to write. And I've been doing that now almost 4 years. I'm coming up to the fourth anniversary. So this is a special day. I'm actually probably just going to turn the program over to these wonderful folks. And I will just introduce them for a minute. I'll just say their names. We have Charlotte Clemente, Diane Akins, Thomas Forsyth, Larry Serfoza, I said it right, and Catherine Long, who's going to introduce everything and tell us a little bit about the writers group there up in Newport Ritchie, what they're doing. They're doing fantastic work. They're creating authors, my goodness, published authors, and it's exciting. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Patsy. It's great to be here again.
Okay. Well, tell us about your group and what we're going to do today.
Okay. The Newport Ritchie Writers Group meets at the Newport Ritchie Library on Main Street every Monday around from 4:30 to around 7:30, 8 o'clock. And the library is our co-sponsor. They help us in a lot of different ways. And so we have them to back us up, and we appreciate all they do. The group has been meeting for, what, about 20 years now, Larry?
Yeah, at least.
Something like that. And we have right now about 55 members, and not everybody comes all the time. It's a, in a pack night, we have about 15, 18 people. And so we help one another to become better writers. And almost everyone in the group has been published or is about to be published. Right. So that's our goal, is to help one another be better writers.
Well, you guys are really amazing. And I love the enthusiasm that you all have for writing. And Larry, I have to tell you, Larry, you are... Larry has written a story, which is so funny. I laughed so hard that my jaw was aching. And it is a story that I'm going to share with some of my literary agent friends in New York, because they are going to love it. Larry, tell us, we'll hear a little bit of your story. You're from Hungary, and you have a fascinating story. I always love when people have had other careers before they start writing. You were an engineer?
I was a mechanical engineer, and then I started writing in 2004, and at the same time I joined this group in Newport Ritchie, and then I'm the oldest member of the group. I saw a lot of people come and go, and then right now we have a real good group right now, and we thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to be here.
Well, I'm always thrilled to talk to writers, but when I read this book, it's called The Tales of Kalimagdora.
Kalimagdora.
I can't even describe how funny this book is. I didn't expect it. It's a fantasy, and I start reading it, and then I realize he's talking about publishing, about literary agents, and it's just so funny. It's so hilarious. And I every time I think about it, I start laughing. So I was really thrilled about it. Now, I know you have You've written how many books now?
I wrote 16 novels and 3 volumes of short stories. Three volumes of short stories.
Okay.
So I've been a prolific writer, and this is my major entertainment for my retirement.
And you started in 2004?
2004, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's one book per year.
Okay, that's great. And you have your latest book is called The Luxury Coach?
Yeah, The Luxury Coach. I'm not sure that's the latest book, but for some reason I selected to present this book. Colin McDora, I'm glad to talk about that too.
Well, yeah, let's talk about this because I thought this Kelly McDora was so clever. It was so unexpected. And
that's my last collection of my short stories, and the whole thing started with this idea that this witch is Germanic witch, Kali Magdora, lives forever, and he gets involved with literature, invites this young man in her house, and then within a year they blossom out, they get very rich, and then they age, and then this Kali Magdora is a pushy person, and he goes to this.
She's pushy, all right.
You're gonna publish my book.
It's so funny. It is so funny. It's a wonderful collection. Really
okay.
Wonderful. I really...
Thank you very much.
This is what, you know, I get so many books and, you know, so many thrillers and so many, you know, serious books. And then to come across this, it was like just a little treasure. I know that I'm going to read that part over and over again because it's just so good. But go ahead and tell us about The Luxury Coach because I know that you wanted to mention that.
The Luxury Coach is I made some notes for myself.
So. Okay. Yeah, just tell us about it.
Yeah. So I like to introduce myself a little bit. I am a humanist, and then I'm searching for the truth for the benefit of mankind, and not for any special interest group. So I consider myself an independent player, and then that should reflect in my books. And then my political views are weird, and then this book, and then most of my books are full with irreverent humor, but that is just to hide the real message, which is I think is a deep-seated message, historical, political, and then I'm really rooting for the doomed, and then I wrote down this large nice sentence that large parts of this book are really for Klingon-eared literary aficionados. Because it's not for everybody. It's something real deep, and then you have to have an understanding and patience.
Well, I love your sense of humor. It's refreshing. You're very honest and very and just very good writing. I'm really so impressed with it, and I love that you have just blossomed.
Yeah, I work hard on becoming a good writer because being a mechanical engineer, I didn't really have a chance to write literature. But I took a college course at the Pascual Hernando Community College, and I read a lot of books. Somebody told me, you be a good writer, you have to read a lot of books. And then so I read a lot of books, made notes, and then eventually over the years I improved, and then I developed my own style, which involves this irreverent humor. But I'm not for the humor. I want to convey a message.
Yes, you have a deeper message.
Message, and
sort of a hope for mankind.
Yeah, I like to present that message through a page long excerpt from this. From this luxury coach, and then this is about a young Jewish girl in 1945, and then she was abused, and then she finds an American man, and the American man takes her into America, and then this page is about that, and then it is not that long, so if I may,
sure,
read it. Okay. In our first night in the cabin, as our majestic ship was already slicing into the huge ocean swells, and as we were waiting, settling in for a good night rest, I told him about the four Russians that raped me. "I'm sorry, David," I told him, fighting my tears. "I will not be able to make love to you, not yet at least. Give me some time, perhaps a long time, to heal and forget what they have done to me." "That is perfectly all right," David caressed my face and wiped away my tears with his smooth, silky, velvet-feeling bare hands. "Your well-being and happiness is far more important than sex. I love you, and I love you without getting physical. I'm not taking you to my hometown and parents just to have a traveling female companion that keeps me occupied day and night. I'm taking you there as my God-ordained woman." "Thank you," I whispered a tearful reply. "I love you too." At that moment, and it was an important moment in life, I made peace with God. Until now, between our arrest in Krakow, and now I believe that God and the devil were one and the same. Sometimes he helped us, but no matter how much we praised him, he enjoyed making tricks on us. He sent those SS thugs to drag us out from our comfortable home, and he killed my parents. The Christians were just as much as his children as we were. He sacrificed his only son to prove that point. He enjoys punishing people with vengeance, giving us free will to be bad or good. What a pathetic excuse for wickedness. David Cromie gave me back my belief in God and humanity. One day my wounds will heal and my memories will fade, and I will forget Sturmbannführer Horst Jürgen, but I will never forgive him and will never forgive the sins of his kind. A week later, we arrived to New York and I saw the Statue of Liberty. From the harbor, we took a taxi cab to Pennsylvania Station, and David purchased train tickets to Portland, Oregon. The train ride lasted 6 days, and I saw with my own wondering, amazement-filled eyes the true magnificence of this great land, America, my new home. We crossed the coal-mining, forest-covered Appalachians, thundered across the endless prairie, and climbed sky-high into the rocky barrens of the Sierra Nevada range. We followed the Great Snake River, passing huge waterfalls and dams and towering redwood trees by the millions, and we arrived on early September morning to the great city of Portland, Oregon. David's parents came to the station, and we drove into their family station wagon to their house in Corvallis. The entire town came out to welcome his homecoming hero, and I was part of the grand celebration. I was a young woman he brought home from overseas, and they embraced me with their open, innocent, and honest, hardworking arms.
It's beautiful, just beautiful. Oh, it's amazing. It's so touching, and wow, this is, you know, I'm always in awe of authors who manage to just capture a moment and capture a time. And Larry, you certainly have. It's beautiful, and it's called The Luxury Coach. Yeah, I'm going to hold it up to the camera because we're also on YouTube here, so people can see it, and it's available on Amazon and where.
It's available on Amazon, KDP, the Kindle Direct Publishing Company. All of those.
Purchase. I think it's called The Luxury Coach, The Sins and the Punishment of a Rocket Scientist.
Yeah.
And just listening to you read this short part will make people, I think, inspire people to buy it and say, whoa.
I hope they do, and then they will read it, because this message happened 70 years ago, but it's still
it's
alive
relevant.
And still relevant. And we have to be very careful. We don't let it happen again.
Exactly. Well, it's beautiful, Larry. I really appreciate you reading it. Well, you know, Catherine, isn't this exciting when you hear somebody who's been working with your group, who writes so beautifully? I mean, this is beautiful writing.
It is, and we have a number of people in our group that write just beautifully. Larry is, of course, our fearless leader, and he has written and published more than any of the rest of us, so he has a lot of experience, and we really appreciate that. And so we always enjoy when he shares his work with us. We learn a lot from him.
Well, it's inspiring, absolutely inspiring. Thank you, Larry. And now I'm going to introduce somebody who I met at a very crucial point in my life. And it's so nice to welcome Charlotte Clemente to the program. You're not published yet, but you're going to be soon.
Yes. Thank God. And thank you for having us here. Really appreciate it. And just like you said, I met you at the St. Pete's Library when you first spoke there. And
not just first spoke, the first time I ever spoke in public.
In public.
And I don't know if you realize how terrified I was. I was so frightened. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have a speech prepared, and I just winged it. But I had so much fun. It was a wonderful, nice, large group, and it was so exciting. And so it was so wonderful that you were in the audience.
Well, you don't think you did well, but you did wonderfully, because this story that I want to publish has been in the making for over two decades. And I had joined that group, and I wasn't writing. I was just going there every month. But after I heard you speak, I was so inspired by your story that I began writing again. And the second time you went there, I think you were there with the attorney.
Yes.
I told you that because of you, I started writing again. So thank you, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here today.
Well, you know, I had so much fun. At the first one, I was terrified. But when I did the second speech, it was really fun because I brought along our wonderful intellectual property lawyer. I call him our legal eagle here, mm-hmm. Bill Larson. And we talked about the important elements of intellectual property that authors have to know, which, by the way, everybody out there, I want to take 1 minute away from Charlotte here. Please, please do not send your work to strangers who send you emails on the internet. I just heard yesterday from one of my listeners, and they fell for one of these scams. And they not only sent their work, their entire book, to somebody in Hollywood who I am sure will never read it, they also sent them a check. Mm-hmm. And this is bad. So please, listen to my program once a month. Bill Larson is here. He's going to be here on March 14th, and we're going to be talking about intellectual property rights, and you really have to protect yourself. But now, back to Charlotte. Charlotte, you have this story, and you're working out to get it published
soon. Yes.
So did you want to read part of it to us and tell us about it?
Yes, I thought rather than describing the story, it's a fiction, I thought I'd read the prologue so you can get an idea of what the story's about and my writing.
Okay.
That's okay.
What's the title of it?
It's called Faith Bell, and I'll read the prologue. Her given name was Faith Bell. She lived in a wilderness, along with prairie dogs, rattlesnakes, and the never-settling dust. Of all her companions, those were the most benign. There were others, some whose hearts were scarred and hardened, and souls mired in the depths of darkness. Her home was a small room with private parlor above a gentleman's saloon outside the town of Justice, Texas. Several other rooms above the saloon housed ladies whose paths, whether chosen or ill-chosen, brought them to this godforsaken place, a place constantly enveloped by wind and swirling dust, an unpleasant combination that invariably left layers of dirt on everything and everyone. The surface muck was evident and tolerable. It was the inner grime most carried within them, though unseen, yet pervasive and destructive. This invisible enemy manifested itself in the actions of daily life. Its roots lay down deep and foundations set so very long ago. Everyone felt this life force and, in its own sinister way, sustained a town. However, while most lumbered about carrying the weight of their own existence, Faith Bell appeared like a rose among the thorns, a cool drink of fresh water in a very arid place. She was unusually tall, with broad shoulders and large hands, none of which could belie her feminine grace, and possessed many grand qualities. But the first thing that came to mind was her red hair. Ah, Faith's red hair, long, radiant, and ever glowing, a mass of red that appeared to possess a life of its own, or able to burn if one dared touch it. After being captivated by her brilliant red hair, one became immersed in her eyes of watery blue, penetrating, and like the ocean, swept one in if gazed into for more than a brief moment. Her eyes seemed to possess all knowledge, and a person felt exposed within her gaze. Pulling her away from her hypnotic stare led to her mouth, often shaped into a knowing smile, as if she knew every lie told or every evil deed contemplated or committed. And if perchance she walked past, her scent evoked memories of familiar yet indefinable aromas, perhaps of a sweet, loving home, a rarity in a place where the odor of perspiration, whiskey, and death permeated the nostrils. And if perchance she walked past, her scent evoked memories of familiar... I already read that. Faith was all around fascinating, not by a distinct or defined beauty, but by many intriguing facets. She was like a magnet, a radiant mass of red hair, grace, and life, all of which drew one in, and there was not a single person who did not yearn for that power to draw them near.
Ooh, that's beautiful. I love, you know... There was a time where I was sort of against audible books, you know, being a purist. But in the past few years, as I've listened to more audible books, I realized the power of hearing the words out loud. It is so beautiful. And I'm sure anyone who's listening to this, listening to you reading, will say, I want to know more. I want to read this book. I want to get into it. And I think you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you so much.
Again, you've captured a vision that everyone will have in their head now.
Mm-hmm.
So you've done a beautiful job.
Thank you.
So you're self-publishing.
Yes, I am.
And you're going to have it up and running pretty soon, and you'll let us know, and then I can tell everybody about it.
Yes, I've gotten so much help from the group. They've been just, their input has been so wonderful. They've helped me quite a bit. So I'm just very grateful to the Newport Richey Writers Group. They've just been wonderful.
Well, that's great.
And the other thing I wanted to mention quickly was that when we had, in November, we had a meet and greet at the library. And I was able to have this printed called, Is It a Trial or a Test? For people that are struggling, and I wanted to raise some money for the food pantry in Newport Richey. They do a wonderful job feeding the homeless and people in need. They serve over 7,000 meals a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I printed it so I could, you know, have monies donated. To support
them. How do people donate?
I can certainly, if anybody's interested, I can certainly mail them this. It's inspirational, and for $5, you know, it'll just cover the postage, and the money will be donated to the ministry.
Okay. Well, I will put I'm going to be traveling this week, but after that, when I come back, I'll put it up on my website, too.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, Charlotte, it's great to see you, and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back, and I have two more wonderful authors, and they're just going to switch places in here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Okay.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell. Or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back with my guests here in the studio from the Newport Ritchie Writers Group. And this is exciting. They've switched spots and I've got two new authors to talk to. And it's so wonderful to welcome now Diane Akins and Thomas Forsyth. And we'll talk to Diane first. Wow. What are you up to, Diane? You're a poet. You're an essayist.
Right. I'm a retired psychotherapist and trainer. And when I retired, I kind of felt lost. And my husband said, you should expand your writing, because my mother always says I was a writer, even when I was a little girl. So I started taking all these courses, and I started writing a memoir for my mother. And then that didn't quite fit. So then I wrote a short story, and I got one published. And I went to a class, and it was a short story class. And she said, this is beautiful, but it's not a short story. I said, what is it? She said, it's an essay. So since then, I've discovered that I really enjoy writing essays better than short stories. And I take things from my life, and I write about them, and I usually write with humor. Like last year, I'm a snowbird from Colorado. And last year, I was driving this unfamiliar rental car, and I went to the CVS, and I went to put on the brake, and my foot slipped, and I went right through the hedge.
Ah.
And all these people came running out and everything. And so I wrote an essay about it and made it funny. And I like creative nonfiction because I can take a story and make it more elaborate and make it funny.
And now you've been published in Catherine's.
Right.
Catherine, right.
I've been published about 12 times. Mm-hmm. But I also have been published, and the one I gave you is the anthology, uh-huh. This I Know. And also the one called Home, a Splinter Place, and that's just a couple places I've been published. But the This I Know, and for some reason when I come to Florida, I get inspired and I write more. And also the group really encourages me too. And so I just get real excited when I come to Florida, because I haven't found a writing group in Denver that I really feel good in.
Yeah,
and I really love this one. The people are so wonderful and I feel very comfortable. And so when I heard about This I Know and I told Catherine about it, I thought, well, I'm 72 years old. I know a lot of things. So I started writing a list of what I know. And I remembered when I first retired, I decided to do volunteer work at a hospice. And they did extensive training. And part of the training was learning how to work with the dying, of course. And we did this exercise that was so impactful to me. And I thought, I want to write about that exercise. And what happened is they had us in this room, and we just had a pencil, and we had these cards in front of us. And she said, okay, I'm going to take you on a journey of dying. You have just been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She said, now I want you to make a list of three things, possessions you love, three people you love, and then she went through with different things, three values that you honor. And we put them down there, and as she walked us through the stages of dying, we had to rip a couple up, because she wanted to show us how, as you're dying, you lose things. And I kept ripping them up, and at first it wasn't a big deal. Do I really need an engagement ring? I mean, I'm not going to be able to ski forever. I have bad knees. But when I got down to the last two, it was my husband and my sense of humor. I really had a hard time. And I thought and I thought. And I thought, well, you know, my husband really couldn't stand me if I didn't have a sense of humor. So I ripped him into little pieces. And then when I had to rip up my sense of humor, I thought, it's time to go.
Okay, well, this is some deep writing that you got.
Well, then I ended it with, what do I want? You know, what do I want when I die? And I want people to celebrate my life and tell stupid stories about me and everything. And yeah, this is one of my most serious ones, but there still was a touch of humor in it. But usually I write the essays really funny. I think the group has told me I have a natural sense of humor. So I just look at life with a sense of humor and a sense of optimism.
Well, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to find your sort of niche. Everybody's good at something, and what I always do is I tell people, you know, find what you really, when you get that feeling on paper, when you start writing, you say, well, this is right, and then when you go back and look at it and say, did I write that? And one of the things, I love to do is to encourage veterans to write, because so often they need like you retired, you needed to do something. And so often veterans need to be able to do something. And when I first suggested it to a veteran, he said, well, I don't want to think about, you know, what I did over there. I said, no, that's not the point. Write something that will take you away from that. Perhaps you want to write a memoir. And as a matter of fact, one of my listeners wrote a memoir about his family, because of what I said. And he had not thought about doing that before. And then he suddenly started realizing, well, I've got some real characters in my family. Some real characters in my family. And I would like to, you know, preserve these stories. And again, he wasn't doing it for, you know, being a best-selling author, but it has really expanded his vision and his life. And again, he's joined a writer's group. And making lots of friends, because I can see all of you enjoy so much talking to each other and working with each other.
Yeah, I agree. As a psychotherapist, I have often encouraged people to write, whether they're grieving or just write about their life. And I'm also a veteran. I spent almost 3 years in the Army. And my last job in my career, I worked in an Air Force base. So I'm very familiar with veterans.
Yes, because I did a lot of work with veterans, particularly with Air Force people, because I'm working on a project to honor the forgotten F-105 warriors. And I've had the opportunity to meet with many, many of them, and to talk about, of course, their years there when they were in the, you know, in the war, and not respected when they came back, because particularly the F-105, because it was their missions were really supposed to be secret. And it was quite a difficult time. They did not get the support of the government as they should have, and so many of them landed up with emphysema and other diseases because of the fumes. In those days, they didn't wear masks. You know, they didn't take care of people, and so having spent a lot of time talking to them. And I'm sort of internet chat with so many of them, and I'm very happy to say that some of these F-105 warriors have gone ahead and written other things, a cookbook. One of them wrote a cookbook.
Wow. That's wonderful.
You know, and that's exactly what he needed to do. So it's really inspiring to see what happens with your group. Well, where can people get your
The two anthologies are on Amazon.com.
On Amazon.
Yeah. Most of the things I've published are in small publications.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I've also done ghostwriting for a veteran who's a friend of mine.
Ah, okay.
And I've written for, and he was in Vietnam. And I've written, helped him write 4 different stories about his time in the Army.
Well, that's good. Yeah. See, that's part of the joy of writing, finding that. Just where you fit in the sort of whole process of it. I'm so happy that, you know, you've come to the program today, because it's encouraging. Some people will say, oh, well, I can't write a novel. I can't write dialogue. I don't think I, you know, can do that. But you have ideas. Everybody has ideas. Put them down on paper.
And they don't always have to be a book.
Yeah, either. They don't have to be a book. They can be a short story. They can be just a little collection of short stories that you write about what you have done, like plowing into it. Yes, I think that's a very funny one. But I'm glad that you're here now. So you're not no snow around here.
Me too, and I didn't wreck the car. Well, and I was really worried about that.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
I really, really enjoy it. Well, now I am going to turn to somebody who looks like he's ready to go because he's excited. Thomas Forsyth. Hi. How are you?
I am fine, and I am absolutely happy to be here.
Okay.
Now, I got to tell you, the writing group, I've only been with it for a year and a half, and I have to thank Catherine and Larry for just opening up my life. My whole life, I've always written little things. I play music. I write little songs. I write poems. I have a wide range of things. I can write something as crazy as a serial killer, and in the next book, it has to do with a little girl in a dollhouse. That's my range.
Okay.
There is no range. All right. I even get into loquats. You know? I swear to God, I did a loquat poem, right?
You did a loquat poem.
Yes,
now that has to be something special. There are not too many people who write poems about loquats.
It was extremely loquacious, I got to tell you.
That's good. Oh, he's good.
But some of the characters that I develop are simple because I'm going to expose myself and say to the public that I used to be a telemarketer. Okay, that's okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
And there was a day when this gentleman came in and he was very heavy and thick glasses and you know, and I looked at him and he was frustrated. He looked like he was going to kill somebody. So I gave him a name and I called him Clifford Grossman. Right, and he became a main character in one of my stories. He's a serial killer. But I did it with humor, because I can't write a serious murder story, because I'm too afraid. I have to write, if I write a murder story...
Yeah, you're no Karen Slaughter.
No, I have to have humor in it to make myself feel better. So, you know, that's how they all end up. You know, everybody loves my serial killer, you know?
Yeah, why not?
Right?
Oh, tell us about is he the one caught in the elevator story?
No. He's another character, but this story right here, it's called What Are the Odds? It starts out as a dysfunctional family. And I myself grew up in a dysfunctional family, so that was pretty simple. You know, and the man is kind of like the lowball on it, and the wife is the demanding one. And they have a daughter that's 14, and she's a little upset because he used to run a swimming pool business. And he named his daughter, her name is Chloe, but she's a little angry because her real name is Chlorine. So that'll tell you something about the relationship between daughter and...
Uh-huh.
And they meet this group, these two people that they just befriended, and they all end up in an elevator. You know, they're all waiting at the elevator, and this murderer also jumps on. And then on the next floor, a woman with a... she's blind with a seeing eye dog. She gets on, and then all these characters develop, and then they eventually, the mob gets involved in it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then there's characters from St. Petersburg that are car thefts. They get involved. I mesh it all in. Right?
And you showed them all in an elevator.
They weren't all in the elevator. No, you have to read the book.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
It's kind of hard to just say
okay,
it all.
Okay, I hope.
Right?
I hope but, not. Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting and. It's fun to read.
Okay. You know. And the title of that one is?
What Are the Odds?
And it's available on Amazon?
Amazon.com, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Woo! And that's your first book?
No.
How many have you done?
Actually, the first one was Strange Shorts. And that is the first story involved a man by the name of Joey Patone. And he tells his story through cars, through his cars. And the story actually opens up. At his funeral, okay, and his mother finds his memoirs, okay, and those memoirs are read at the funeral by each one of the, the brothers and sisters, and it tells it's a very interesting story about his life through cars. Like he had a '64 Ford Galaxy, and then he had a Chevette, and you know, it just surrounds them. It's kind of an interesting story.
Well, again, you guys are all so clever. I'm always so thrilled with.
Yeah.
The whole group, you all have different interests, different styles, And the way you come together and the joy that you have in talking about your writing, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, we feed off each other, you know. And that's what it is. And, you know, when you get, when you read it, and then they go, sometimes, you know, most of the time it's pleasant, but then sometimes you've had a bad day, you know. That didn't go over too good, you know. So they teach you how to correct it. And then you go right home, and, you know, the thing about it is when you're writing, you need to read your own work over and over and over and over. Because when you do, you find more things that you can either subtract or add, right? And that's a lot of people just write something and then they don't work on it. You got to work on it. The latest one I'm working on right now is the one I've liked the best so far, and I'm about halfway through it. It's called The Inventors, and it has to do with a story of all the inventors that have ever walked the earth. When they die, they go to another dimension.
Uh-huh.
It's called Tinker City.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And their mission is to, in order for them to get to heaven, their mission is to come back and see if they can fix history in some way. And it's kind of cool, you know. People learn about inventions as well as, you know. It's kind of a fun story, you know. We got, like, Paul Revere in there, and we got, you know, the Wright brothers, and, you know, Derringer, the guy that... we got Lincoln, we got all kinds of people in there, Benjamin Franklin, so it's filled with all kinds of characters.
Oh, you guys have such imaginations. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And so much originality. This is wonderful. Isn't it? I think it's just inspiring to hear you and to think that, you know, you've done it. You've actually sat down and written and gotten things published or about to get things published. And it's something that you can be proud of and your families can be proud of. And it's part of history. Because sometimes people will say, well, if I write something, you know, 100 years from now, 200 years, who's going to care? But it's not true. First of all, your families care. But I do a lot of research. And I will find this little gem of a book that was written by somebody who was not famous. But they just had an idea. Like, you know, it was just something that they had to get off their minds, and they wrote it. And 100 years later, 200 years later, you read it, and you're touched by the same thing that they were touched by. And that's what's so important. And so, and of course, I love poetry. I'm always going back and reading poetry, which brings me back to Catherine. And yeah, and we're gonna move the microphone back over to Catherine, because Catherine, I love Catherine's poetry. You've given me quite a few, and I have, you know, gone through them, and they're very moving and very interesting. And as you know, when I first started this program, I didn't know anybody in the business. I don't know actually how it happened. I was very fortunate that I spoke to the poet laureate, Juan Felipe Herrera. I had been doing the program for a few months, and for some reason, and I still don't know how it happened, I got a call from the Library of Congress, and they asked me if I would like to interview the new poet laureate. Well, first of all, I'd only been doing the program for a few months. So I was shocked that the Library of Congress, first I was shocked that I got a call from a library, because I do not have a library card. I will admit this. I will, and you know, I'm going to come up to Newport Beach and talk at the library group. But
You don't need a card.
I have not had, well, it's good, because I have not had a library card for 30 years. Because I'm one of these horrible people that possession is 9/10 of the law. And once I have a book, it's really hard to get it away from me. So I, after years of overdue books and having to pay for books, I no longer got library cards. Actually, I let my kids get library cards. So when I got this call from a library, and I didn't understand it at first, Library of Congress, it just said, I heard the word library, and I thought, and I really got scared. I thought, well, maybe It's all the way from when I was a kid.
They tracked you
down. They tracked me down. You know, you saw that Seinfeld thing where they tracked. So I had a moment. I really, and then I thought, oh, no, it must be one of my kids. I don't care. I'm not in trouble. They, you know, because I lived in Texas for many years, and they actually arrested a woman who had overdue library books. And they arrested her. I mean, she was like 80 years old, and they put her in handcuffs. In handcuffs in Texas. So I was scared.
Wow. Sounds like Texas.
Then they explained to me that, they wanted me to interview the new poet laureate. And it's very lucky for me that it happened to be a poet that I knew. I had actually met Juan Felipe Herrera. Oh. So as you can imagine, I've over the years, ever since I was a kid, I love poetry. So I'm very happy that Catherine is going to read one of her poems. Tell us about it, and then what do you want to read?
This poem was part of the anthology that Diane is also in, called Home, A Splintered Space. I sent three poems in. They published all three of them. But I chose this particular one because I want to dedicate it to people out there whose lives didn't get a good start for one reason or another, family problems, abuse problems, substance abuse, whatever. And this one is about that. Home for a child is supposed to be a place of love, nurture, harmony, but it was never those things for me. Terror and pain, the words of the day, fear and flight, trying to run away from all the violence of the fray. Shed blood is red, bruises black and blue. The wounds within are darker hue. Colored by alcohol, his words spew. He's after me, running me down. I could never make it into town before the blood dries and turns dark brown. Violence and hatred right in my face, vomiting anger all over the place, filling up even the smallest space. No one believed when I tried to tell I didn't get those wounds when I fell. But from Dad, who turns home into hell. For 36 years, life stayed a mess, doing bad things to deal with the stress. I nearly left myself no redress. Home turned into a dark, hard, barred jail, filled with females whose crimes turned me pale, women of stone who made me seem frail. Not at all where I wanted to lodge. How the hell to get out of Dodge? This place is as cold as our garage. Work release finally opened the door to regain part of my life once more, keeping me from falling through the floor. Well, so that's for all those people out there that have been through bad times, because nothing stays forever and bad times can turn into good times.
Well, it's a very touching poem and very beautiful. And again, it's so wonderful when you have captured an idea and have put it on paper and share it. And poetry particularly can just touch a person's heart so deeply, and they draw upon the memory of a poem years later. And that's a very inspiring poem.
Well, along those lines, I wanted to mention the Loquat Festival.
Okay.
Because there is a literary contest going on.
Perhaps for people who do not live down, explain what a loquat is.
Okay.
Because there are people, believe me, in Michigan, we never heard of a loquat.
Right, I believe
in
that.
In northern Michigan, I'm a Youper, and nobody ever heard of a loquat.
Well, it has actually been a journey of discovery for everyone in our group, because I think we only had two members of the group who knew what a loquat was, uh-huh. who happened to have trees in their yard. But the rest of us, who we wanted to join to participate in the literary contest, and you had to have something about a loquat in what you wrote, either a poem or a piece of prose, essay, or what, short story, whatever. And so we all had to go to Google and find out what loquats are. But they are they're an import from China. It is a tree that bears fruit. The fruit is edible, and it is actually a very nice fruit that's kind of a cross between apricots and plums. And maybe has a little citrusy flavor to it. They make jam and chutney and pies and
the contest,
wine.
The contest for this writing something about a loquat is still open until March?
March the 10th is okay. The deadline. If anyone is interested in writing anything about a loquat, it doesn't have to, the whole piece doesn't have to be about loquats. Yeah. It can be about the day you fell in love under the loquat tree.
Yeah.
Well, as long as a loquat is mentioned.
Okay, and this contest is being held by there's a loquat association.
Well, it's actually the whole thing is part of Ecology Florida's work, and the Loquat Festival itself is sponsored by Ecology Florida. At the festival, there would be jams and jellies for sale and other loquat-related things.
And when is that going to take
place? That takes place on Saturday, March 23rd. Starts at 9 a.m. and goes until 2 p.m. And it is located at Francis Avenue Park in Newport Richey.
Is this something new to Newport? Or they've been celebrating
this for six years
of the Loquat Festival.
Yes, and for those who want to write something and become part of the contest, the prizes are $100 for first prize, $50 for second prize, and $25 for third prize. And everyone who writes a piece and comes to the festival to read it during the open mic session will be published in their chapbook called Leaves of Loquat.
Oh, wow. This is fun.
So those of you who want a little publishing opportunity, there's
why
one.
Why not? Okay.
And if you want to submit something, to send the submission, it has to be only one page, and you send it to dechant@usf.edu. So
okay.
That's
repeat saying. Those first.
It, D like a David, E like an Edward, C H A N like Nancy, T like Tom, @usf.edu.
Okay, and you have until March 10th to get in on the loquat business. Whoa, that's fun.
Yeah, we're going to be, a number of us have entered and will be present at the festival, so it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for coming in today. It's been so much fun to have you here and to just share in your enthusiasm and to be awed by your talent and your imagination. I just love, I tell you, when if you want a good laugh, I have to say it again, get the Tales of Calamagdora, by Larry Serfozo. Serfozo? We got it?
Serfozo is good, yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, well, Larry, a wonderful Hungarian, and I'm so happy that you came in today. Hilarious story. So, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to hear your words in an audible book or to see them on paper, or if you're really lucky, like I hope Carol J. Perry will be, to hear those words, lights, camera, action, and have your book turned into a Hallmark miniseries. That's what I want for Carol. Mm-hmm. And again, make sure that you say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. He was surprised when we were invaded by the Newport Richey Writers Group. Thank you so much, Ed. And everybody, have a wonderful day. Okay.
Thank you. Same to you. Okay.